A note to listeners, this episode contains references to online harassment and violence. June 29th, 2019. Taylor Swift is watching television at home in her New York City apartment. She's been busy promoting her upcoming album, Lover, which is due out in 2 months. She's just beginning to wind down for the evening when it's a text from Scott Borchetta.
Hope all is well, and congratulations on the success of your first 2 singles from Lover.
Swift smiles. Her most recent 2 singles debuted at number 2. They're her first release at her new record label, Universal Music Group. It was a bitter break when she left Borchetta and his company, Big Machine, so it's nice of him to reach out. Swift keeps reading.
Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Central, the Wall Street Journal will announce that I am entering into a merger acquisition with Scooter Braun and Ithaca Holdings.
Her stomach drops. Scooter Braun is the super manager best known for shaping the careers of Justin Bieber and Kanye West, two artists that she feels ganged up on her after West claimed he made Swift famous in a controversial song lyric. If Braun now owns Big Machine, that means he also owns her master recordings that she spent years trying to buy back. Now, every time hit songs like Love Story and Shake It Off play on the radio or a stream, Braun would profit from her work. All because she signed away the rights to those master recordings when she was all of 15. But Swift's not going to let this pass without a fight. Swift opens up her laptop and starts typing.
For years I asked, pleaded for a chance to own my work. Some fun facts about today's news. I learned about Scooter Braun's purchase of my masters as it was announced to the world. All I could think about was the incessant, manipulative bullying I've received at his hands for years.
Swift is getting fired up as she writes.
This is my worst case scenario. When I left my masters in Scott's hands, I made peace with the fact that eventually he would sell them. Never in my worst nightmares did I imagine the buyer would be Scooter. Anytime Scott Borchetta has heard the word Scooter Braun escape my lips, it was either while I was crying or trying not to. He knew what he was doing. They both did. Controlling a woman who didn't want to be associated with them. In perpetuity. That means forever.
Swift is a long way from that trusting 15-year-old girl eager to sign on to a label. Right now, as she types on her laptop, she knows exactly what she's doing. She's crafting a bomb. And tomorrow, when she hits send on her Tumblr post, the internet and social media will blow up as both fans and critics join the battle.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In the last episode, as Taylor Swift grew increasingly self-confident, so did her discontent with her label, Big Machine. So she jumped ship for Universal. That was a gut punch for Borchetta. Scooter Braun saw an opening and approached Borchetta with a deal to buy Big Machine. And with that purchase came Swift's masters from her early albums. In this episode, Swift fights back by deploying her own very dangerous weapon, the Swifties. And Braun pulls out all the stops to protect the $300 million asset he just bought from Borchetta. This is episode 3, Revenge of the Swifties. June 2019, Chicago, Illinois. A group of friends are at a bar watching a baseball game. The news interrupts the coverage.
Taylor Swift is blasting manager to the star, Scooter Braun. Braun, who manages Justin Bieber, just acquired the rights to her entire catalog up through 2017's Reputation. In a post to Tumblr, she called the sale my worst case scenario. Swift says she's been bullied by Braun for years and cites a post.
One guy in the group slams down his beer and shakes his head. Oh, come on. Taylor Swift's been bullied. She's always playing the victim. His girlfriend intervenes.
Hey, Jack, that's not fair. I think she's genuinely upset that this guy bought her songs. It's like he owns her.
Their friend interrupts.
Look, she made a mistake and got into business with someone without doing her homework, but how long does she have to pay for that? For Christ's sake, Jack, she was just a teenager. You would have done the same damn thing.
I don't know. I just have a hard time feeling sorry for Taylor Swift, of all people. Like, go cry me a river on your private jet. The girlfriend takes a sip of her beer.
Either way, I hope she does re-record her old stuff.
Wait, what?
Oh, you didn't see that? Kelly Clarkson tweeted that Taylor Swift should re-record her old songs.
Kelly Clarkson, a former American Idol winner turned daytime TV host, posted on Twitter that Swift should re-record all the songs she doesn't own the masters to, just to prove a point.
That's so weird. Well, I'd stream them.
Kelly Clarkson's suggestion is not really that unheard of. In 2018, pop singer JoJo re-recorded her early albums because of a fight over the masters with her former label. Def Leppard released what it called forgeries of its hit songs while fighting with its label. And in the 60s, the Everly Brothers re-recorded versions of their recent hits when they signed to a new label. And that is something labels don't want repeated. To deter artists from doing this, now contracts usually have clauses barring artists from releasing re-recorded work from its initial release for 3 to 5 years or more. Swift's exclusivity clause isn't up for more than a year. Scooter Braun doesn't know yet whether she will re-record or how he'd respond if she does. But he figures he has some time. But so does Swift. And she's not wasting any of it. August 2019, Scooter Braun's office in Beverly Hills. Braun sits behind his desk in panic mode. He's got his elbows on his knees and he's running his hands through his cropped hair. Swift has just announced on Good Morning America that she was going to re-record her old songs. And that poses a serious problem for Braun.
Hello?
It's one of Braun's investors, a guy who put in big money to help Braun buy Swift's masters.
Scooter, what's this I'm hearing about Taylor Swift planning to re-record her old songs?
Oh, don't worry, that's nothing. It's just talk.
It better be just talk. We paid $300 million for those masters.
Braun shifts uneasily in his seat. The truth is that if Swift does re-record her old albums, it poses a big problem, and this investor knows it. He plows ahead.
Look, she's already proven that she has an incredibly loyal fan base that's the size of a small country. If she re-records those songs, it greatly diminishes the value of our investment.
Listen, it just doesn't make any sense for an artist as big as Taylor to, re-record her old material. She'd just be wasting time. Trust me, she'll be focused on making new stuff.
Look, I'm expecting these recordings to make us $15 million a year. If they don't, I'm going to be severely annoyed. And my attorney will be making that extremely clear to you. Got it?
Braun leans back in his chair,
and tries to stay calm as he calculates how things might play out. Swift might not follow through on her threat, but that's unlikely given that she's told the whole world that she wants to re-record her masters. Her contract's exclusivity clause is up in November of 2020. That means he has a little over a year to milk this investment for all it's worth, maybe even find another buyer. But for now, the future value of Braun's purchase is under threat. So he decides to fight back the only way he thinks he can, by choking the Songbird. What Swift doesn't know is that Braun still controls her right to even perform her songs. November 2019, Montecito, California. Braun is at home in his airy six-bedroom mansion, relaxing on his white couch while sending emails. A black baby grand piano sits in the corner of the room. A flood of messages are lighting up his phone. Tons and tons of people are tweeting at him, and it's pure venom.
You are the epitome of what it means to be a tyrannical, greed-seeking misogynist in 2019. You are selfish, cruel, evil. What the? What's happening? He scrolls down. I'm shattered. How can this be happening in 2019? Is this the real world we live in? A male-dominated world with no excuses. Shame on you. And then he notices something. A lot of the tweets are linking back to a Taylor Swift message that she just posted. He clicks on her tweet. It accuses Borchetta, Braun, and Big Machine of blocking her from performing a medley of her older songs at the upcoming American Music Awards, or to use them in a Netflix documentary about her. Swift tells her fans Borchetta and Braun would only allow her to perform her songs if she agreed not to re-record copycat versions of her songs next year, or to even speak negatively about them. And her infuriated fans are circling Braun. Braun can't believe that Swift has weaponized her millions of fans. He's outraged and feels her actions are unprofessional and reckless. The fans are barraging Braun and Borchetta with tweets, demanding that they give Taylor back her masters. It's Borchetta.
Scooter, we got a situation here.
No kidding. My phone's on fire.
Yeah, mine too, but it's not just the tweets. Our offices have been getting tons of threatening phone calls and emails.
Braun leans forward in his chair.
Oh no, you mean like death threats?
Yeah. My employees are scared for their lives. I'm about to shut down the office for everyone's safety. I'm really worried someone's going to bomb the place.
Oh, man. Well, do whatever you got to do to keep everyone safe. We have to get in front of this. Let's have the publicists start working on a statement. We need to fight back through the media. I can't have Taylor ruining my public reputation.
All right, let's do it. Talk later, brother.
Borchetta hangs up. Braun sits quietly for a moment, stunned. And then he reads a new Instagram DM.
Hi, why don't you just die with your children? I'll buy a gun tomorrow and shoot you all in the head. Holy shit. This is serious.
Braun is terrified. These Swift fans are threatening his life, all because of something she tweeted. He has to do something to make all this stop. So a few days later, he posts on Instagram and begs Swift to meet with him. Borchetta and Braun release a statement, making it clear that Swift can perform her songs at the American Music Awards. Swift got what she wanted by going public with her frustration. Though she probably didn't expect fans to send death threats against Borchetta and Braun and his family. Braun wants to make amends, that's clear, and that puts Swift in a tight spot. She worries that if they meet privately and strike a truce, it will appear that she's caved to a bully. She has to decide what to do, and soon, because as long as things are unsettled, the Swifties are an unpredictable force.
You You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Thanksgiving 2019. Swift is in her New York apartment with close friends, hosting a Friendsgiving dinner. Supermodel Gigi Hadid passes the Brussels sprouts to fellow model Martha Hunt. Queer Eye chef Antoni Porowski sits across from them. Swift sips from her wine glass and stands up.
All right, I'm going to get the pie.
All right.
All right, about time.
Swift walks into the kitchen. She left her phone on the counter in an attempt to enjoy dinner. But she can't help but notice when it lights up with an email, and the sender is Scooter Braun. Swift quickly scans his email. She'd reached out after she'd heard about the death threats. Now he's saying he wants to begin negotiations for her to buy back her masters. Swift keeps reading.
Before we share any financial records, I'd like you to sign an NDA saying you will not speak about me ever again unless it's positive.
Swift frowns. Braun wants her to sign a document that would force her to keep quiet forever before she bids for her own work. And he doesn't even quote her a price. To Swift, this doesn't seem like a genuine offer. Just then, her friend Gigi walks in.
Hey, are you okay?
Swift tries to smile.
Yeah, it's just work stuff.
She puts down her phone. The smell of baking apple pie wafts through the kitchen as she carefully takes it from the oven. As she goes through the motions of being a good hostess, her mind whirs as she calculates how best to respond to Braun. Finally, she lands on something radical. April 2020, Beverly Hills, Los Angeles. Like the rest of the world, Swift is locked down because of the pandemic. She can't go on tour, so she's been spending a lot of time in her home studio. She's dubbed the room the Kitty Committee Studio because of all her cats. Like lots of people stuck at home, she's been spending a lot more time alone. It's made her more introspective, maybe even sad.
When you are young, they assume you know.
She's working on a new song called Cardigan. As she raps recording the refrain, she sits back and reflects on her own deliberately ambiguous words. She sings about being young and people assuming you know nothing. It could be about how adults perceive teenage love. Or it could be about her deal with Borchetta,
when she signed away her masters all those years ago. Either way, it's a return, even if temporary, to an earlier iteration of Swift. The pounding electronic beats of her last pop album are gone. Instead, she's using a delicate piano loop, echoing drums and a wispy synthesized sound. Swift pauses and then picks up the banjo. She starts playing something else, or rather, something old.
We were both young when I first saw you.
It's Love Story, her early breakout hit. But this time, when she sings it, she's mastered her vibrato in a way she couldn't as a teen. Her voice is filled with the nostalgia that comes when looking back on something after a long time has passed. Much of the song, and its arrangement, sounds the same as the original, but it's Swift and her voice that have changed. Swift takes her hands off the strings and sits back to think. When Braun asked her to sign an NDA, she balked. What he was asking didn't seem fair. Now, she's not sure of how to move forward. But it's the middle of a global pandemic. The world seems so upside down. She's changed, and her music's changed. She's banking on her fans remaining loyal. She figures, what the hell? May as well go for it. A few months later, she releases a surprise album of new songs called Folklore, and it has the biggest ever opening day on Spotify for an album by a female artist. Swift used to rail against Spotify, but now she's huge on the platform. Cardigan gets 7.7 million streams the day it's released, the biggest first day for any song in 2020. And that makes her wonder whether fans would buy re-recordings of her old songs. No, she thinks. They've already bought those songs more than a decade ago. Summer, 2020. It's sunset in Bel Air, Los Angeles. Scooter Braun is sitting outside at the palatial home of Stephen Royer, the president of Shamrock Capital. It's an investment firm that began as the money manager for the Disney family. COVID is a threat, so the two men are sitting 6 feet away from each other. Braun adjusts his mask.
Steve, thanks so much for meeting me in person. I just really wanted to talk this out with you one-on-one.
My pleasure, Scooter. Sorry we can't host you inside the house, you know, COVID and all.
Braun nods and cuts to the chase.
Look, I've got an asset I believe you might be interested in. I know you've been doing a lot of investing in the media and entertainment spaces.
Yes, we have a whole fund dedicated to content, and we're always interested in assets that can generate cash flow.
Braun grins, his eyes crinkling above his mask.
Well, how about Taylor Swift's masters for her first 6 albums?
Royer raises his eyebrows.
That's quite the proposition, but didn't she say she was re-recording those?
Listen, there's a big difference between saying you're going to do something and actually doing it. These masters make $15 million a year.
Okay, I'm listening. What's the asking price?
$300.
$300 million is close to what Braun paid when he acquired them from Big Machine last summer.
But if she does re-record her songs, that presents a sizable risk to assets profitability. Why would we take that risk?
But it's not just the masters. Think of the videos and the merch. You'd probably own the rights to the artwork of her first 6 albums. And the videos of those first 6 albums. That is really consistent revenue for your firm.
Royer nods thoughtfully.
Well, let me talk to my people. We'll get back to you.
As Braun leaves, he's thinking about how relieved he'll be to unload Swift's masters onto Shamrock. Sure, those masters made good money for him, but now, at least, he won't be dogged by Swift's fans and the allegations that he was just another industry guy controlling a female artist's destiny. In effect, she forced his hand. He had to do this to protect his own reputation in the music industry. Unlike Braun, neither Royer nor his investment firm has any personal history with Swift, so they're not going to face the same backlash as Braun. Mindful of the hostility between Swift and Braun, Royer plans to make overtures to Swift to smooth things over, though he'll hit quicksand pretty fast.
October 2020 in Los Angeles. Swift is at home in her studio on a video meeting with her producer, Jack Antonoff, who's in upstate New York. They've been talking regularly and sending each other song snippets. She's been working on creating more new music. An email has come in. It's from a group called Shamrock Capital.
Hold on, Jack. I need a sec.
Swift reads the email. The investment company is informing her that they've bought her masters.
Oh my gosh, someone bought my masters.
What? Who?
Some group called Shamrock Capital.
Well, is that good news?
I think so. At least this means Scooter doesn't own them anymore. Wait a sec. There's more.
Swift keeps reading. Shamrock is inviting her to partner with them.
Wait, they're telling me I can put up some money and become an investor in my own masters? So I wouldn't own them outright, but I'd own a small percentage in them.
That seems kind of weird.
Sorry, Jack. I gotta go call my lawyer.
Her lawyer wants to immediately loop her in on a call with her business manager. Together, the three of them reach out to Shamrock. Swift is irked, but she puts on a good game face.
Hi, I'm so pleased to be talking with you.
As we are. We're very excited about the opportunity to partner with you.
Swift frowns into the phone.
Right. I guess I'm just a little confused as to why you waited until after your deal with Scooter closed. Why not bring me in from the beginning?
The representative for Shamrock sighs.
Scooter insisted that Shamrock not communicate with you in any way while we were negotiating with him. He'd only allow us to contact you once the deal had closed.
Swift's cheeks redden with anger. Yet again, she's been purposefully left in the dark.
Okay, let's put that aside for a moment. If I do partner with you, does this mean that Scooter is out? He doesn't get anything from my masters anymore?
The Shamrock representative shifts in his seat.
Well, under the terms of our deal, Scooter will still be profiting from your work for some years to come.
Swift grits her teeth and abruptly turns down Shamrock. Why should she settle for owning a tiny fraction of her work? She wants to own all of it. And yet again, she tells her fans about the failed deal on social media. Swift tweets about the details of Braun's sale to Shamrock. And, thanks to her massive following, people pay attention. It's rare to get this level of insight into the business dealings of a superstar. Most deals of this size are kept secret under non-disclosure agreements. And Swift takes it one step further. She confirms that she's begun re-recording her old albums. A month later, in December 2020, Swift releases a sneak peek of one of her re-recorded songs, and it quickly goes viral. The pump has been primed. A week after that tease, Swift releases Evermore. It's her second album in 5 months. The surprise album blends folk, pop, and alternative rock, and it does just as well as her folklore album. Swift's new albums are killing it on the charts. She starts thinking maybe she can replicate that success with her old masters. To do that, she has to go up against all the forces in the music industry arrayed against her. The outcome is far from certain. She decides to roll the dice.
We get support from Court. You know, the way people work is changing, and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Court's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Court Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at Court, that's CORT.com/office. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own.
Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Early 2021 in Los Angeles. The pandemic is easing up and restaurants across the city have just reopened. So Scooter Braun has taken his next business meeting to a famous Korean barbecue spot. Braun picked this restaurant as a sign of respect for the guy sitting across the table from him. Pop music mastermind Bong Si-hook is in his late 40s with a round face and wire-framed glasses. In South Korea, he's well known as the hitmaker behind global pop sensation BTS. How does this compare to Seoul? Bong smiles politely.
It's pretty good.
Braun grins at Bong, who is the CEO of HYBE, a South Korean entertainment company. It's a publicly traded talent agency label hybrid behind some of K-pop's biggest acts, like BTS, TXT, and Seventeen. You know, I really think your company is like the South Korean version of mine. Bong nods.
There's a lot of similarity in our verticals.
Both started as glorified music management firms and have now expanded into other investments. And now, Braun has a new idea. You know, I think that we could come together and make something really special.
Oh, yeah?
You know, the synergy between our companies means we could take over the world and rule pop. I mean, just imagine the collaboration between BTS and Bieber. Bong nods and laughs.
Teenage girls would faint on sight.
That's what I'm talking about. Slowly, Braun lays out his plan. He wants HYBE to purchase Ithaca Holdings, his company. Bong is intrigued.
Let's talk specifics. I want to hear more about your vision.
Over the next few months, a deal takes shape. And in April 2021, HYBE buys Braun's company for $1 billion. That means it now owns Big Machine, Taylor Swift's old label. For Braun, this is an incredible deal. He's managed to sell his company to HYBE for $1 billion, and he still earns cash from Swift's masters, owned by Shamrock. But Swift already has a plan to strike back at Braun's growing pop empire. April 2021, at a London sidewalk cafe. Swift is wearing a hat and big sunglasses. She's trying to go unnoticed so she can enjoy the moment with her boyfriend, Joe Alwyn. They've been dating the last few years and keeping a low profile.
Sorry, gotta take this. It's my manager.
Hi, Taylor. I got some great news. Fearless just went number one, again.
Swift lets out a high-pitched scream. Londoners turn around to stare. This is unprecedented news. She just released a new version of her 2008 album and called it Fearless, Taylor's version. The songs sound pretty much unchanged from the original. There are slight differences in the musical arrangement and her country twang is gone, but that's about it. She squeezes Alwyn's hand while she talks to her manager.
Oh my God! How did this happen?
It's all streaming. Your fans are streaming the hell out of the album.
Swift wells up. She can't believe it. She's the first artist to re-release an album that zooms to the top of the charts.
Who would have thought that so many years after pulling my music from Spotify, I'd have streaming to thank for this album hitting number one?
7 months later, she re-releases another old album, Red, Taylor's version, of course, and it also hits number one. For Scott Borchetta, it must be bittersweet to see the success Swift has had with her re-recordings. The Taylor's version albums make the masters he sold less valuable to Shamrock. But it doesn't matter to him now that Shamrock Capital owns that asset. He's already made millions off Swift. Now, she's getting what she wants. Braun would later go on the record to say that Swift has every right to re-record, though he criticized her for weaponizing her fan base to attack him. And all of this drama leads to lessons for the music industry, too. Thanks to social media, artists can speak directly to their fans, who can push a song to the top of the charts or rain misery down on music chiefs and their families.
This decades-long brawl also showed the volatility of music catalogs as an asset. Lots of investment companies have been buying up catalogs, but it's clear that the value of those assets can change overnight if an artist chooses to re-record or faces a public scandal. Swift has been dead set on protecting her songs and paving the way for other artists to follow her lead, maybe too well. She's being sued by the girl group 3LW for plagiarism. They claim Swift's lyrics in her 2014 hit song, Shake It Off, were lifted from their 2000 song, Play Has Gone Play. Swift insists she never heard their lyrics until they sued her. She says her song was inspired by the unrelenting public scrutiny of her personal life. The story of Taylor Swift's battle to reclaim her masters might seem over, but it's not quite that simple. Years from now, people will be talking about an epic struggle between an artist and the industry that helped put her on top, but left her struggling to control her own destiny. What changes and what doesn't will define the closing chapter in a drama older than Swift, almost as old as the industry itself, and help redefine a formula that has made the music industry the multi-billion dollar factory it remains to this day. And the odds are pretty good that Swift will write a song about it. From Wondery, this is the third and final episode of Taylor Swift versus Scooter Braun for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. For more on Taylor Swift, check out the Miss America documentary. We also recommend reading Taylor Swift, The Whole Story by Chaz Newkey Burton. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomed wrote this story. Voice acting by Caroline Kinley, Michelle Philippi, and Will Choi. Karen Lowe is our senior editor and producer, edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.